You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You know, one of the iconic images of the pandemic, I think, that is going to stick with me forever is the photos that we've seen of people doing those window visits with their loved ones in long-term care homes. At the peak of the first wave, residents in nursing homes were isolated from their families for months as the buildings that they lived in went into complete lockdown. It was such a painful time. The only way they could connect with their loved ones was by phone or FaceTime. But often, people would want that connection. And so family members would come and they would stand outside and they'd coordinate a window visit. Their grandmother, their grandfather, their parent would be on the other side of the glass and they'd be face to face, even with a window pane in between. It did provide a bit of comfort. Some families are now breathing a sigh of relief after an announcement that caregivers will no longer be locked out of the homes during outbreaks. The provincial government announced that designated caregivers can still visit nursing homes. That's even if there is an outbreak, even if there is a second wave. Joining me right now for some reaction on this, I have on the line Laura Tamblyn-Watts, the CEO of CanAge. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
What is your reaction to this announcement?
It's been a long time coming, and many, many Ontarians will be so pleased to know that they will finally be able to have some type of real access to their loved ones in long-term care. So this is good news.
So who qualifies as a caregiver?
So the way that the system works is starting on September the 9th, an older adult who is in care, or if they can't make the decision themselves, a substitute decision maker, can choose two people who will have essentially unrestricted access, unless the house is an outbreak, at which point it goes down to one person. So in the end, it's really about, are you on that list of designated people? The problem will be if there's, you know, many, many people who want to visit, but if you've got sort of two main essential caregivers, they can have unrestricted access as long as the home is not an outbreak.
Okay. Now, if we do get into a potentially serious second wave situation, do you think that they'll end up kind of turning the time back and retracting this and going back into the lockdowns like we saw before?
I hope that we've learned some lessons from what we did in the first go around. And I think it's pretty certain we will have a second wave. There's no, particularly with back to school, family bubbles are changing and we're going to see a rise in outbreaks. I hope, because in the language of this, the pre-planning says that even if a home is an outbreak, you can still have one essential visitor, including inside the home. So it appears that there is some learnings about the incredibly difficult impacts it has for self-isolation for residents. So hopefully they will stay to at least one caregiver allowed.
Now, I know that the impacts of them being shut off from the world and their loved ones was really detrimental. Do you worry at all, though, about people going in, even as caregivers, meaning well, but potentially bringing the virus in?
You know, I think we're at the stage now where we're learning to live with COVID. And sad to say it, but I think that this is going to be something we're going to be dealing with for the next couple of years. Yes, there is a risk. There really is. But the risk can be managed appropriately. You can wear a PPE, you can observe physical distancing, you can make sure that you're using all of the best training and support, and that family caregivers are very willing to follow those restrictions and learn what needs to be done. What we do know, however, is that the result of keeping people in their room, in some cases 4 and 5 months at a time, has been absolutely devastating. So it is a balancing of risk. But I think that what they've come through, we've lobbied very, very hard to make sure that that complete isolation doesn't happen again.
Have there been lasting impacts of that? You know, obviously there's loneliness. These people were caregivers that were not being permitted in. But aside from that, do you think that there's been any lasting repercussions, like people who have kind of regressed cognitively because they didn't have that stimulation?
It's been terrible, the regressions that we've seen, particularly remembering that overwhelmingly, the people in long-term care in Ontario do have some form of cognitive impairment like a dementia. In fact, it's closer to 90% of the population. So many of these people can't really understand why no one was visiting them, or they weren't eating properly because they weren't in a dining area where they were having social cues to eat. They weren't getting activation or stimulation. we were seeing people losing huge amounts of weight and really regressing in the ability to walk, toilet, and even speak.
That is so sad to hear that. Well, I'm glad to hear that this is something that is changing right now. We're chatting with the CEO of CanAge, Laura Tamblyn Watts, about the fact that the provincial government is allowing designated caregivers to still visit nursing homes, even if, you know, we go into a second wave. As of right now, you're hoping that that doesn't change. I want to ask you about the current conditions at, you know, nursing homes, long-term care homes. More than 1,800 long-term care home residents died during the beginning of the pandemic here in Ontario. Do you think we've learned from what happened? Have we improved the situation?
Oh, we can only hope that there will be some learnings out of it. You know, the spotlight that we saw because of COVID really just shone a light on pre-existing problems anyway. And, you know, it's been one government after another saying it's somebody else's problem. You know, we're seeing some commitments from both federal and provincial governments to do something about it. We haven't really seen substantive change yet. We know the recipe to improve long-term care. You know, we just need to do it. It's improving staffing. It's improving the physical infrastructures. It's making sure that we have the right mix of staffing. These are long-known answers. I can only hope that we will actually start to fix the system, but it really will require both the provinces and the federal government to work together, which has never happened before, but we can only hope will happen now.
Well, you know what? It has been happening from time to time. We saw the Prime Minister and the Premier standing alongside one another a couple weeks ago, complimenting each other, really saying how well they've worked together. So it's sad to me that we needed a pandemic to put partisanship aside, but I think we've learned that we can make things happen quickly and we can work together. So hopefully that is one of the lessons learned. But right now, from what you're hearing in your position, do frontline workers at these nursing homes have the necessary PPE?
It's greatly improved, yes. So there was a time where we were speaking back in the spring and even early summer where they were desperate to get the PPE supplies. That seems to have stabilized. It's always a concern to make sure that you have adequate supply. And what we're seeing as well is that family caregivers, people coming into long-term care, in many cases are being asked to bring their own, you know, masks and gloves and sometimes PPE. We're seeing it quite inconsistent applied in terms of people who are coming in. So that is a concern. It appears that there's, you know, adequate supplies of PPE as far as we've heard now. The question is, will it continue? And also for family members and caregivers coming into the home, you know, is that going to be available to them if they can't bring their own?
Mm-hmm. How about staffing levels? Has that improved?
Staffing is really at the core so much of what we're really talking about today. And staffing, of course, is down, not up. When we have the restrictions to one home, which is a key factor in improving care, it does mean that your floating staff goes away. And we already had really significant staffing shortages. So no, we're nowhere near where we need to be in terms of staffing.
Okay, let me ask you about the pay. Because earlier today, Premier Doug Ford just acknowledged in the news conference we were carrying that he heard the head of the union. He believes that PSWs do need more money. And he said, that's the bottom line. I'm going to act on it immediately. He didn't really elaborate beyond that. Is that satisfactory to you? Are you confident that the government is actually going to move on that front?
Well, we've seen kind of back and forth on that issue. There's been commitments, you know, within this pandemic to provide some pandemic pay. There's certainly been, you know, an avalanche of people saying that, you know, a pay and also safety and dignity of the work. So it's not just the money, but it's also the conditions of the work as well are nowhere near where they need to be. At the same time, you know, there's been some back and forth about having previous caps on pay. And so that's an unclear area right now. I mean, it's certain that our frontline workers in long-term care, or for that matter, in retirement homes or home care, are getting significantly less pay than if they were working in a hospital. It makes no sense. But in Ontario, we pay people more if they're in acute care and less if they are in what we consider chronic care. That has to change. We need to make sure that we pay people equally for the kind of work that they're doing. And in many cases, the work in long-term care is more difficult and indeed more dangerous than at a hospital just because of the degree of frailty. So are we there yet? We're not. I'm hopeful, but we're nowhere near where we need to be for that.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just a little bit cynical over here, as I always tend to be. But and I'm not, just to be very clear, I'm not comparing people that work at a grocery store with people that work taking care of human beings in long-term care. I just want to make it clear. But, you know, a lot of the companies that were toasting the grocery store workers and the frontline people that were at the cashes at Loblaws and Walmart and Metro, and they were given hero pay, but then it was temporary. And as the economy slowly reopened and people went back to work, they decided to take that money back. And it just seemed kind of like a slap in the face. It seemed really sleazy to me. And so I just hope that, you know, those people who were once lauded as heroes don't have their pandemic pay anymore. And I just hope that doesn't have to happen to PSWs.
I think that we are at a real turning point for understanding how it is that we compensate people, and not just in pay, but just building on that, making sure that they have pensions and benefits and full shifts. And if they're working different shifts, that they get paid for travel. Those are really important aspects. We need to draw people into this industry, not push them away. BC, for example, is engaging in a major initiative to retrain hospitality workers who are out of work, so restaurants and hotels and so on, and retrain them with good pay. And that's a model that we could be looking at in Ontario. I know that our hospitality industry has really had a very difficult time, and we're short of workers in long-term care. So is there an opportunity to do retraining and support? I think there is, but they have to want to be there, which means they have to be good jobs.
Well, and that's what they've been doing in Quebec, right? They have that program that's trying to bring 10,000 new workers into nursing homes. And I interviewed a young woman who actually was a restaurant manager. So similar to what you're saying, she was working in the restaurant industry, and now she is a nursing home attendant. So thanks for coming on the show today, Lauren Tamblyn-Watts. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Laura Tamblyn-Watts, CEO of CanAge.